It's refreshment time, folks.
After returns and videotapes.
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Do you like scary movies, Sydney?
You have a TV?
No. I just like to read the TV guide. Read the TV guide. Don't need a TV.
Books, records, films, these things matter. Call me Shelley. It's the fucking truth.
Over 1,600 titles, each for rent at just $2 the first night, and only a...
I don't watch TV.
Yeah, but you are aware that there's an invention called television, and on this invention they show shows, right?
Tonight on 6 Ed World.
Okay, I want channels 18, 24, 63, 109, 87, and Weather Channel.
Welcome to the Frog Brothers Podcast with your hosts, Justin and Alec.
Hello, and welcome to episode 15 of the Frog Brothers Podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin, and with me, as always, Alec.
Hey, how's it going? It's me, it's Alec. I'm here. I'm talking into the microphone.
Check this out. That's for you, Cliff. My friend Cliff's telling me that I need to start drinking on the show, and he thought you should pull an Elon Musk and smoke.
Oh, you should have told me that beforehand, because I don't have anything prepared. But I did smoke before the podcast.
Well, you can save it for another day. I'm having a Boulevard Beer Cherry Lime Radler. It's pretty tasty. And, of course, I've got a nice cold glass of ice water to keep the pipe silky smooth. Because, you know, my voice likes to squeak on here a lot. So it's been an action-packed week, sir. I know I had a pretty eventful weekend. What was it? Thursday night, I went and saw Back to the Future on the big screen here. Pretty sweet. Then Friday night, I went out to Lawrence, Kansas to visit 1313 Mockingbird Lane, a new and vintage toy store out in Lawrence, Kansas. It's a pretty awesome shop. They have a little bit on an Amazon Prime TV series about toy shops. So if you get the chance, check it out. Highly recommended. If you're not local to the Kansas City metro area, check them out on Facebook. They do some Friday night live sales. So they'll do some live streaming from their site and sell toys that they have on there. But I went out there because I pre-ordered my Jurassic Park Amber collection, Dennis Nedry and Dilophosaurus from the store. And when I went out there, I bought a few other things, including a NECA Stay Puft Marshmallow Man bobble, some vintage trading cards of different varieties, a vintage Raymond Stance Ghostbusters figure. I'm not sure what the series is. I believe it was from around Ghostbusters 2 because he's got the dark flight suit on. And I also found you an Extreme Ghostbusters Egon Mint on card. So that'll be coming in the mail to you very soon.
Not soon enough.
Oh, and then Saturday I went to a double feature down at the Armor, or the Screenland Armor, which is one of our local art theaters. They do a lot of independent showings. So if you think the things that you like and maybe appreciate about Alamo Drafthouse, if you have one of those in your area, just think this is locally owned business. They have more than one location. One of them also has an arcade bar called Tapcade. And they do some really awesome stuff down there. They're always being innovative and doing cool things and have some amazing art up on the walls in there. That was actually my first time checking it out, but my friend Edgar highly, highly recommends them. So I figured I'd give them a shout out. I saw The Craft and The Lost Boys on the big screen in there. So that was pretty damn entertaining. I gotta say, there's a lot of stuff in both of those movies that you just don't notice when you're watching, even at home, like on a high-def screen. You're just not gonna notice the details you will when you're at the theater.
Yeah, theaters rule.
So, what the hell did you do this weekend?
I did a lot of working. This is actually my weekend, so today I went over to Goodwill, found some new VHS. Nothing too crazy. Did find Blade, Outsiders, Ghost Ship. Found a bunch more Goosebumps books, so pick those up.
Goosebumps.
Then I went to Target, found the Michael Myers Toonie Terrors from NECA. It's one I had been searching for a while. So I picked that up, and I looked at some of the other NECA figures they had there. Just Target, the one near me, has a pretty good selection of NECA figures usually, so I looked at that stuff, and then kind of just browsed at the toy section and the games and stuff like that, some movies.
Gotcha.
Then that was pretty much that. I got some, I did get a Lando Calrissian in Skiff Guard disguise, loose, complete, in the mail this week. So I'm working on a Return of the Jedi Jabba's Palace kind of display. Last week I did get in the Power of the Force Kenner Jabba the Hutt that used to come with a Han Solo figure, but I didn't get the Han Solo figure. I just got the Jabba out of box, but got him shipped for like $10. It was pretty cool.
Hey, that's awesome. That'll go nice with your display and your little collection there.
Yeah, so I got some more Shadows of the Empire stuff in, the Secrets of the Shadows of the Empire and the Game Secrets, as well as Star Wars Insider Magazine special on Shadows of the Empire, so...
So all you need now is the comics to go along with your collection then.
For sure. And then I need the Outrider still. And I need the Shadows of the Empire Slave 1.
Oh yeah, yeah. I still got plenty of the toys to collect. But as far as the getting the complete story, they say you need the video game, the book, and the comics to get the whole story. So we should be able to do that. So... sometime in the future, probably after you relocate to a more desirable location, we will be able to sit down and make a weekend of Shadows of the Empire, all-inclusive, all the awesomeness that it can be and should be and hopefully is still to the current times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I have the soundtrack on CD coming in the mail, too. So
you got that soundtrack coming, and I ordered that. It's also got a vinyl release coming out in September, I believe. But speaking of soundtracks, I also ordered the Lost Boys soundtrack because I just realized I didn't have that. I didn't find any vinyl copies on eBay, but I did find a CD, so I picked that up.
Yeah, I'm going to need to pick it up on at least cassette. I need to pick up a working cassette Walkman, too.
And I really went over the board and bought a set of Vampire Fangs that are the Lost Boys branded. They were a promotional item from San Diego Comic-Con in the 2004 year when they're advertising the two-disc DVD set. So real high-class, old-fashioned, timey stuff here.
Nice.
So, shit, that was back when I was still in a band that was playing actively all the time. So wasn't looking out for double-disc DVDs all the time then, and I think by then I already had it on DVD. So
yeah,
the old-fashioned times of being a poor band member, you don't buy things twice. You don't have that luxury. So it's either all going into band and spending time in the band or merch or whatever else. So, and then obviously putting a roof over your head. Nowadays, yeah, it's a little more luxurious.
It's much funner, like, justifying buying collectibles and toys for a podcast than just saving money for extra, like, equipment and shit. And for, like, shit like t-shirts and, like, you know, shit like that. That's like satisfying, but it's not like this is a different kind of satisfying. Because the payoff is there immediately.
Yeah, yeah. The payoff's there. Really livens up your living space. I mean, and don't get me wrong, my whole collection of guitars and basses and instruments over there is it's a nice addition to the room. I mean, between that and my two proton packs, I mean, fuck, it really brings the room together. But
that proton pack really brought the room together, man.
I mean, yeah, it's amazing what that'll do for your confidence and just feeling good about life in general, having all those around.
Come
all
on,
the time.
Not on the proton pack, man.
Exactly.
You need to rewatch Big Lebowski.
We should do some Lebowski Ghostbusters cross-ups, mashups. I can't even talk. I don't know what I'm talking about.
John Goodman was in Blues Brothers 2000. That's about as close as it gets.
Booze Litter 2000. Let's have a moment of silence for that hot pile of steaming shit that should have been covered by a cat with litter.
Yeah, I was about to say.
On to cooler things and more ways to spend money, because who doesn't need more ways to spend money on stuff? There is a whole slew of Blu-rays and 4K sets that are been announced recently.
Goonies today, I saw.
Goonies has a pretty high-end package setup that they've got coming out. They also have a very similar kind of setup for Beetlejuice. I believe that case kind of looks like the Handbook for the Dead as far as the casing and everything goes. And they also have the Friday the 13th Blu-ray series? It's basically got everything on Blu-ray there for the first time.
Oh, yeah, that thing looks fucking nuts.
Yeah, so lots of good ways to spend money. Speaking of other ways to spend money, I picked up the gold-plated or gold Ghostbusters logo pin that was a San Diego Comic-Con 2020 exclusive. On my pin board, I've already got a gold DeLorean from Back to the Future 2 and a gold Avengers logo, so I figured that corner can be gold. I'll just go ahead and get it.
I'm Gold Greg.
Yeah, I was doing a gold member. I went from gold member and you went to Gold Greg.
Yeah, Gold Greg. The G is silent.
I'm Old Greg.
You know me. You seen me. You love me.
They need to do a NECA figure of just Old Greg.
No, it needs to be a fucking two-pack. Old Greg and the Crack Fox together. Sign me up. I'll get that.
He needs to come with and one of his accessories can be a funky ball of tits from outer space.
The Day of the Funk Dad. Boots of Collins.
1979. Yeah, so I tagged NECA.
What else is new?
Just been, honestly, lusting after more Alf shit. And made a post last night on our Instagram about how I want NECA to do an Alf figure.
I saw that. I'm hoping they'll react and give us that, because that's a...
Do a one-off Alf figure, you know? Like, you don't have to do anybody else, just Alf. You could even do, like, three different Alfs, like, with different accessories or something, or... Even just one Alf with a bunch of accessories, I'm game, you know?
Yeah, just one Alf. The background of the packaging can be the garage with the spaceship through the roof and all the shitty Tinkers with on there, right? So you can give him a radio, you can give him a pickle for the microphone.
He's got to have a TV.
TV, and obviously maybe some radio equipment as well.
He's got to have a bunch of food. Radio.
Food, and then obviously he needs the house cat.
I'd say he could probably come with Lucky, and then some of his spaceship parts. He has, like, a bunch of different little things that they mentioned throughout the show and shit. Some clothes to put on him.
That'd be a pipe dream toy there, so someone needs to make that happen.
There was a company that made an Alf toy about 5 years ago, but it was so limited, you can't find that fucking thing. It's not on eBay.
That sucks. I hate it when you hear about stuff. I'm like, all you can find is pictures of it. You're like, does this even exist?
Yeah, you can hardly even find pictures of it. And then you're like, God damn.
Have you checked Instagram for photos of it? I mean, I know Instagram's full of bullshit sometimes. If you're searching hashtags trying to find something cool, you can search a lot of nonsense too. But you never know. You might be able to find what it looks like. That way, if you're scrolling down the eBays or the digital shopping outlets, you might be able to know what it looks like and be better prepared.
Yep, so. I wanted to get that San Diego Comic-Con Gremlin, though.
That'll be pretty slick. Yeah, I've got that Comic-Con Dennis Nedry in the Barbasol can coming soon. That's supposed to ship pretty quick here, I think. Oh, but speaking of Alf, you do have some Alf trading cards coming because I bought 6 packs of Alf trading cards, 3 for me, 3 for you. I think you're going to get some Harry and the Henderson trading cards, some Ninja Turtle trading cards.
Sick.
So, 1313 Mockingbird Lane has a bunch of trading cards up front, and Terry in there basically said there's a lot of other stuff he has too that's not necessarily in the stock of the store, so... if you wanted to buy bulk of some of those card lines, you'd probably be able to reach out and get those from him.
Yeah, that guy's going to take a lot of my money when I move there, so.
Yeah, he had a complete Ecto-1 from the Kenner line for $185. Looked pretty damn good. He also had a bunch of vintage Real Ghostbusters figures from the Series 1 Wave 1. I think he had Venkman. He had a Stance. I don't know if he had an Egon or not, but I mean, it, with packs and ghosts and the streams attached, and those are about 40 off the card, but that's really not a terrible price because they looked good too.
So you know how I sometimes give you shit for saying pretty sweet and highly recommended a lot?
Uh-huh.
I wrote down because within a minute and 52 seconds of this podcast being recorded, you had said both.
That's pretty epic. Yeah. You just say dope a lot. You're like, that's dope. That's
hell
dope.
Yeah.
Fucking Marilyn Manson over here. We're all stars in the dope show.
Yeah. I like it. It's a pretty dope saying. Dope word, you know. Dope.
Just reminds me of that episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force. He's like, well, call him Mr. Balls or something. I'm going to work on that name, though. Like, I just need to work on what I say. It's fine.
Well, call him Mr. Balls. Fucking shake.
Hey, speaking of balls, I bought a pair of the Me Undies Back to the Future underwear. First time those fuckers have gotten me. Like, I don't know why I need that, but...
I have my pair of Ghostbusters boxers still from back in the day, but I don't wear them. They're in a box.
Yeah, I have those, and then I have some Beetlejuice ones, too. Randomly, the novelty of shit is fun, but these ones are actually the style and stuff I like now, so I was like, God damn it. Fucking impulse buying.
Yeah.
So let's jump into it. Let's get into the meat and potatoes, even though we don't eat meat.
But we beat our meat.
You can leave early and beat traffic, or you can stick around and beat your meat. Edgar will know exactly where that's from.
I watched Men in Black on VHS the other night, and I was just cracking up at, I mean, it was Edgar suit. It wasn't Edgar.
Yeah, he gets pissed at that. Apparently when Edgar moved to Kansas, that was around the time that was popular, so everyone just called him Edgar suit. I think I used to do that when I was intoxicated quite a bit in old-fashioned times.
Yeah.
Don't do that anymore, so.
Aww. He says as he drinks his alcohol.
Just one drink.
Pansy.
I'll say I don't drink the quantity or behave the way I may have used to in the past.
What a bitch.
Well, neither do you, so shut the fuck up.
I just don't really drink anymore, hardly at all. On occasion.
Yeah, I know you prefer the tampon enemas, so those really just get you going.
Yeah.
With the vodka.
Well, these days
I'm
more into mainlining wine.
Well, wine in a can is a pretty good thing, too.
Yeah, but why drink it when you can just fucking mainline it?
Yeah, that's true. I don't know, something about the survivability long-term of doing that?
I mean, yeah. There's something wrong with it, for sure.
I mean, I'm sure a doctor could tell you a whole bunch of reasons why not to do that, but I'm not a fucking doctor, so you're on your own there, buddy.
I play one on TV.
I have, too. So let's get into the next segment.
It's called My Dog Just May Have Thrown Up on the Floor.
And I think he said his name was Ralph.
Exactly. Keep on knocking, but you can't come in. Episode by episode.
Those are so
good. Yeah,
cool.
I know. I have the first four on DVD. I got Tommy Chong's signature. Met him at the dispensary in Arizona.
That's badass. So cue episode by
episode.
We now return to the real Ghostbusters.
Diane, 11:30 a.m., February 24th. Entering the town of Twin Peaks.
Pretty good.
Bill Murray's the funniest man on the planet.
episode by episode.
Who likes bugs? They like bugs. The Extreme Ghostbusters don't like bugs because there's bugs everywhere. In this
Speaking
episode.
Speaking of Men in Black.
This felt like a crossover, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. I kept expecting to see Agent J and K fucking stepping out of the black car or whatever.
Yep, that's kind of what I was waiting on. They should have done that. They could have done that with that series and just done it as one episode, even not naming them, though, just had characters that appeared like them on there, right?
Right, yeah, it'd have been sick. This is an interesting episode.
I forgot to write down the episode title. Did you?
No, I didn't either.
Damn it. It's the 11th episode on Hulu, so.
Pretty lame of us, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, we're terrible hosts.
They're either following along, or they're like, God damn it, they're covering this again, and they're skipping ahead to 20 minutes from now.
Yeah, they're like, fuck, I hate that show.
Fucking Extreme Ghostbusters fans, goddamn losers, sons of bitches, I'm going to kill their families. That's what they're thinking.
I don't know about that. That's pretty fucking extreme, but, okay.
Exactly, Extreme Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah, that makes so much sense now. Damn it, Beavis. I'm going to smack you upside the side of your noggin.
Speaking of extreme,
the extreme! The extremely loud barking in the background?
Yeah.
So I thought this was an episode of Hey Arnold when it opened, because this big fucking football head having motherfucker opens it up with some other guy that's supposed to... I don't know what ethnicity he's supposed to be. All I know is it's Eduardo's voice actor doing it, and that's the thing about this show is lots of times when these primary voice actors are doing secondary characters, they don't really give too much of a shit because they don't have a lot of speaking lines, so they just kind of covered it up enough that a kid's not going to notice.
Yeah.
But, like, that's the first thing. I was like, oh, shit, here goes Eduardo doing double duty. Motherfucker's getting overtime for this episode.
Yeah, pretty much. Those were some weird-looking characters, though. Like, the way they were animated, they looked pretty fucked up, so.
Yeah, especially the football guy. Like I said, his head looked silly the whole time. And he's in a few scenes there, so. Basically.
They're, like, breaking into a casket or something, you know, that looks like.
Typical.
Possibly an old Egyptian.
Yeah, typical stuff. Like they're breaking into a crate, and there's some sort of thing in there they retrieve. Turns out to be some sort of a bug. Usually it turns out to be some sort of a lizard. This bug thing comes in this little, I don't know if it's supposed to be a rock or, you know, amber or whatever the hell it's supposed to be, but, you know, they leave it behind because they get spooked and then they,
All I know is I expected one of them to hold it up and take off his hat and go, because Grant's like me, he's a digger.
Yeah, I mean, he should have. That'd have made the episode more interesting, a Jurassic Park crossover, because someone let a demon out of amber. That'd be pretty cool.
I think hilarious.
I should write for a comic book series. That sounds like something that would be in a real Ghostbusters comics from the 1990s.
One of the Goosebumps I picked up today, I've never read it before, but it has, like, ghost velociraptors on it, on the cover.
Hell yeah.
It's the sickest fucking shit I've ever seen, and I'm like, my God. I'm buying this. I was going to buy it anyway, but like that cover was like, holy shit. So anyway, back to this episode.
Yeah, so then they do the opening credits on there after you see this little bug guy crawl out of there. And it's kind of an interesting character design. I do like the design of that bug character. Looks kind of neat.
Yeah. I pretty much always usually like the ghost designs on both of the Ghostbusters cartoons, but this one, it has a different look. They're ghosts, but... Yeah, like you said, I like the way this one looks for the most part.
Yep, so this bug thing goes up into the shadows, and the next thing you know, it takes human form, so you kind of get an idea where the episode's going, right? They call that foreshadowing, kids. Foreshadowing.
Shoot it! It's mutating into human form! That's how I felt.
I'm gonna shoot you, goddamn mutated son of a bitch!
Sorry about your barn.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, but this also had alien vibes when the bugs start fucking up in that guy's stomach and shit. And I was like, oh shit, they're going to chest burst. And, you know, it's a children's cartoon, so they come out of his mouth instead, which is still pretty horrifying, to be honest.
Yeah, if you're a really little kid, that'd be kind of spooky. For me, I was like, oh shit, they're going the aliens route here. And then, of course, as a kid, I hadn't seen Alien a lot, right? You know, like, our mom loves that movie, but I hadn't seen it very much. So I'd always seen Spaceballs, though, where like the chest burster comes out of there, too, at the end.
Yeah, and
so
he
sings. I kind of halfway expected these bugs to do show tunes. Just because, like, that's what I expect when I see something jumped out of someone's chest. You can thank that for being into comedies and all that stuff, in addition to my appreciation for Alien and the Alien franchise, in some regards.
And someone get Janine a glass of Ecto Cooler, because she'd be thirsty in this episode, bro.
Jeez, yeah, she is. They really got her. She's hot to trot, man. They got her out there trying to get everything going.
Yeah, she's like, hey, Egon, you want to, like, watch me slide down the fire pole and shit?
Yeah, pretty much. She's like,
although I did notice that they used the fire pole in this episode, and I don't know how many times they've used it before, but it's kind of funny because the rest of them, I mean, I can't recall because it was such a blur, but it's like you clearly see some people go down the pole, and then Eduardo goes, and I'm just like, how the fuck is Garrett upstairs?
They talk a lot about handicap jokes on here. They even made one later that I referenced. But yeah, they don't really show you how he gets around the fire hall too much.
I mean, that's easily explainable a way to say, right? Yeah.
And we put in an elevator. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah,
but they
were sliding down the pole, and it just kind of felt like, all right, if I was Garrett, I'd be like, oh, okay, guys, I'm gonna go take the elevator.
So, side note here. So this big-ass spider that I saw in my room this morning and I couldn't find him later, just found him. Apparently he wants to be part of the podcast.
Welcome our next guest to the podcast. We have a spider crawling in Justin's room. Maybe he bit him in the testicles, maybe not. Let's find out. Spider, how's it going?
Hey, guys. I bit him square in the nuts. We're going to blow up because I'm a brown recluse.
Spider, are you voiced by the same voice actor who voices Meatwad?
I'm a Meatwad. Hey guys, I'm a Meatwad. Yeah.
Chunk of meat or something. It's talking
like the Meatwad. Hey, you ever met anyone that got those weird hairs and the toes? You're like the only other guy I met that got those.
One of my favorite episodes of that show is when Danzig is in it.
Oh God, that's
have
amazing.
You seen that episode where there's like blood running up the walls in Carl's house? And they sell the house to Danzig because it's all bloody, and he's like, this is fucking awesome. I want to move in right now.
It's classic.
But anyway, Extreme Ghostbusters. I don't know, I think the reason I keep getting distracted is because this is one of the episodes that feels a little more filler-ish.
Yeah, there's some moments into it, right? I mean, the whole Egon thing, it feels just... You know, I know that they, like, hinted at that in the first movie, and you're like, okay, but I just never really felt that, like, they carried on with that later on, right? And the fact that they're still doing this after, like, you see Janine get it on with Louis Tully, I'm just like, that doesn't seem like that didn't play out very well. I don't know why they're still trying to do this.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, it just didn't, it's one of the lesser episodes, but I still felt pretty decent watching it. There was a part where I felt when the monster roars near the end, I was like, is that literally the Godzilla roar from the 98 Godzilla and cartoon that went along with it? That's what it sounded like.
Yeah,
to me.
I think it was the same production company that did the cartoons, I think. So yeah, they probably had a lot of the same sound effects and stuff from their sound, you know, effects library.
Yeah.
So let me tell you. So there's a part in this episode where the bugs are like gassing the room out and Egon puts a mask on. And that was the highlight of my episode because I got to make a, you know, do some pictures of that for coronavirus and tell people to wear their masks. And that was one of the highlights of the episode because it seemed kind of relevant. And the rest of the episode was like, oh, here's an episode about bugs.
Yeah.
So the only other thing on there noteworthy is that, you know, they don't explain how Garrett gets around the firehouse at all. They sure as shit don't care about there. But they made a point that when the rest of them had to go up through, into a drop ceiling in the restaurant to chase the bugs, that Garrett was like, hey, I'm in a wheelchair. I really can't go that way. And, you know, he's like, says something really cheesy. Like, I don't think that ceiling's like handicap accessible.
Right.
But it is interesting because, like, the whole premise of this episode then is, like, Janine trying to make Egon jealous. And then, like, you can tell that the bug starts to hate Janine or Egon because of that. But then, like, the only reason he's interested in Janine because she doesn't kill a spider, which is also relevant because the spider in here, as soon as I can reach it, it's going to die.
The, that is quite hilarious because it's relevant to this episode. And also because right after that scene, that's when they find the bug alive or whatever, and they start following it. And it shows them, like, walking behind the bug in the city. And I'm just thinking, like, this bug is Forrest Gump because it just starts walking and people start following it. And that's what I was reminded about.
Running. And it has a face, too. And it's,
I just felt like running.
And then all of a sudden, I didn't feel like running no more.
So that's hilarious.
See if there's anything else worthy on the notes. Don't mind me while I flip the page.
Not really. I mean, the episode kind of ends with, you know, Kylie having to tell Egon, you know, fucking just tell Janine you love her and that you want to, like, kiss her and shit. And then Janine's, like, kind of awoken from her thing after she's morphed into a bug.
Yeah.
And then she takes the trap over to the bug dude and fucking is, like, acting like she's about to have bug sex with him. And then opens her wings and opens the trap and just sucks him and all of his little fucking bug people into it with her, with him.
With the ghost trap that you grabbed, yeah.
Yeah, so.
The only other thing I'd like to say about this episode is that Janine's design, when she turns into a bug, looks a lot like the queen from the game Killer Queen. They have that for the Switch that you can play. And so, yeah. Like, you have this killer queen that's kind of like this insect bug that's a killer, and it's a female form, right? So the character design heavily, like, influenced that, I think, right? And if not, it's just coincidence because, you know, queen bug or whatever, but
yeah,
interesting. So
I definitely got Wasp from Ant-Man and the Wasp vibes from it, kind of.
Yep, I could see that, too. Yeah, definitely where the character vibes, right? There's do the female anatomy, like, the body style, but then, like, make it like a bug, so.
Yeah.
Like, I guess it's not earth-shattering that these designs are all fairly similar, but at the same time, whatever. See how the influence carries over from genre to comics to games to whatever else you might find it in.
Oh, pretty much. So, looks like we'll move on to our next segment.
What do you mean you haven't seen this film supreme made up of a dream team? This movie's pretty great. You're fucking late. Let's accelerate and get it on your plate.
And you don't want us exposing ourselves. And you don't want us exposing ourselves. Exposing ourselves.
So this week we're going to be covering the Netflix original movie, A Futile and Stupid Gesture. It's actually based on a book. Was released in January of 2018, directed by David Wayne, who was director of Wet Hot American Summer and Role Models. And it's basically about Douglas Kenny and Henry Beard forming the National Lampoon magazine. And so,
yeah, so this is one you'd recommended to me. I had not seen it, but you'd mentioned it several times over the course of the podcast and just our normal conversations in life, so I figured we'd cover it on here.
For sure. I pretty much watched this movie right after it came out. I remember seeing it on Netflix when it was new and being like, what's this? And I like Will Forte, and he stars as Doug Kenny, so I was like, oh, I'll give it a shot, see what it's about. And, you know, it has moments that are kind of dumb here and there, but overall I like this movie a lot, so...
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting movie, right? Even just the way it enters, because, like, you're watching this movie, and they show a supposed old version of Doug Kenny, and you're like, wait, I thought he was dead. And that's just a taste of how bizarre this movie gets on its own. But it's not bizarre in a way that's unwatchable. It's bizarre in a way that kind of suits the story. Kind of makes it break the fourth wall sometimes where... this old version of what would have been Doug Kenny talks to the younger version or interacts with the younger version to kind of do some transitions throughout the movie. It's different. It's kind of neat because I haven't really seen anything I'd say, oh, that reminds me of this or that, because the way the style of the directing and storytelling is.
Right. It's it breaks the fourth wall a lot, and for a biopic, that's pretty weird.
Yeah, I mean, you know, most people are most aware of, like, Deadpool breaking the fourth wall, right? So, see this. Yeah, exactly, right? So you've got some of those standards that people know and expect there, but this kind of does it, and it's different. Like you said, it's a biopic, so what are you doing with that? But it does help move the story along, right? So, but one of the things that struck me is great, just right at the beginning, it's like, everyone has a fucked up family, and I'm like, amen.
Yeah.
All been there, everyone can relate to that, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I kept relating really hard to the character of Doug Kenny because of, like, the struggle of trying to be a creative person in general, trying to make it work with also the personal struggles.
Yeah, there's a fine balance there that I think, I don't know, I think it's like if you're like a creative person at all, you're probably going to relate to this movie, right? Because there's always a fine balance between like doing something that's going to take care of the bills and make you stable and successful versus following your passions and being yourself and pursuing stuff, even if it means repetitive failure or not having the easiest life because you choose to be interested in pursuing your passion compared to just trying to be complacent, which is a very difficult struggle at times for people, right? I can definitely relate to that because you got to have, I have to have creative outlets just to keep myself sane, happy, and having a good time. And so, you know, I always have those types of things going on, but
right.
If you're doing that for your main income too, like you could see where the challenges of that would be. And this movie does a good job of portraying that, right?
Yeah.
So, it's fun.
So, why don't you tell me about your experience with the actor who plays Henry Beard?
Henry Beard. So, you know, I kind of looked up the cast of this, and I'm like, Domhnall Gleeson's in this. I'm like, okay, so he's been in Star Wars, right? Everyone knows who he is. So, Mr. Hux, like, all right, let's see what Hux is up to. And I'm like, watching this movie, I'm like, where the fuck's he at? Oh, yeah, he plays Henry Beard. He's got dark hair, and like you can barely even tell it's him until you can kind of see his red eyebrows underneath the glasses he's wearing to play the character. So,
yeah,
definitely was not expecting that. So he does a pretty good job in that role, though. Like he's a good actor. I have a lot of respect for him after that because it's completely different than what I was used to seeing him in, and the character that he was playing, just playing someone so chill and so relaxed and. Yeah, I think he was probably one of the highlights just as far as acting in this movie goes. Like, Will Forte is okay. I like him in some stuff better than others, like MacGruber. Is so silly and fun. But in this, it's just the way he talks, too, I think, that kind of throws me off. He takes me out of the moment a little bit with him, just depending on what he's doing. So some of the movie was great. Some of his stuff just wasn't amazing in there, but I think he carried the story well enough that you can enjoy it.
I'm a huge Will Forte fan. The only time I really haven't liked him is when he played Shaggy in Scooby-Doo. Last Man on Earth, I have never finished the series. I think the writing on it and everything else is about 50-50. It has some really good moments and interesting moments, but also it kind of just doesn't hold my attention too much. But MacGruber, he also, you know, used to just be on Saturday Night Live in general as a writer and a bunch of his other work, and a lot of his other film roles are great, but yeah, I don't really have any problems with him in this movie, but I can see that it's not like you could hang out with Doug Kenny and try to portray Doug Kenny, because there's not a lot of footage and things like that he could even look at. So it often does just sound like Will Forte.
Yeah, and it's hard to do a biopic like that, especially for someone that's going through some struggles, because he's just such a natural, like, comedian and stuff that, like, when you see him struggling, you get that in some of the scenes he portrays it really well, but some of them you don't really quite grasp what he's really going through. So, you know, I felt like there's some things missing there, but overall, I definitely liked the movie. I just loved how it went through the whole progression of, you know, them being Harvard students, trying to get this magazine started, trying to get financing to start the magazine, and like all the rejection they had to go through, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that just shows you, though, like, if you're going to do anything that's a creative outlet and it's going to be successful, especially if you're relying on anyone else for financing or to help along that process, this is the rejection you're going to have to go through is unreal. So yeah. The fact that they show, like, them not getting or not giving up because they've got rejected from a lot of places, you know, they kept going and they kept going, and I think that was a good part of telling the story, right? And back then it was a little different compared to what it is now, just because I feel like the internet floods everything and there's just such an abundance of any and everything there that sometimes the people that are the most persistent will be successful than someone more talented because someone more talented got discouraged along the ride, especially in music is what I feel like these days.
Oh yeah. It's a weird thing. I think the depictions of a lot of the celebrities in this were pretty good. There are people playing Maddie Simmons, Chevy Chase, Bill Murray, John Belushi, Gilda Ratner, Christopher Guest, Harold Ramis, Ivan Reitman, Michael O'Donoghue. I mean, I could keep listing more and more that have smaller parts and other people that you just probably wouldn't know as much, but all those people do pop up in the movie and then pop in and out kind of as it goes.
Yeah, and that is one thing I would say. Do a little reading up on it before you get into it if you're not too familiar with all those characters, because you may not recognize who everyone is as they get in there. But, you know, like, we're obviously Ghostbusters fans, Stripes fans, all these things. So Harold Ramis showing up in there, Ivan Reitman showing up in there.
The actor who played Ivan Reitman fucking looks like Ivan Reitman. It's kind of weird.
The one movie that they didn't really talk much about in this was Vacation. But I think...
Yeah, I don't know. I think Doug Kenny had died before that, so...
Yeah, but I don't know if the original story that was, you know, adapted, because John Hughes famously wrote for National Lampoon's, and I think that's where several of his stories that were eventually adapted into Vacation and Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, I just think that Doug Kenny wasn't working at the Lampoon at that point.
Yeah, very well could have been.
That's my understanding, because I have done a lot of interesting research on this. Because that is very interesting that he started out there, too, because he obviously is thought of as a little more family-friendly. But, I mean, if you watch his movies, he's family-friendly, but he's also has some dirty fucking shit in there, always.
He is, but I think he just knew how to adapt his material to a wide audience, though, so...
Yeah, for sure.
But, I mean, it just goes to show you, like, how so many of these comedy genres and places just were founded in there, right? I did like how it showed like SNL getting started and the jealousy that he had to kind of put up with over that because, you know, they said that they're too busy doing the radio show and everything else. So,
yeah.
They're doing their magazine then, the radio show, and what else were they doing? I think I had a whole list of stuff that they've been working on, so.
Yeah, they had Lemmings, the live show.
Oh, yeah, I also meant albums and the live show, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, you do see his destructive behavior, though, because, like, you see him start to do these drugs just to keep up with, first of all, the people around him. Like, you see him hanging out with Belushi and Chevy Chase, and, you know, they have some portrayals of them, like, doing a lot of drugs. And one thing about this movie that made it interesting to me, compared to a lot of movies, right? The drugs didn't necessarily seem fun for anybody. You like in this movie, it felt like you could tell that they're a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't portraying it as like, oh, this is fun and over the top. It was different in the vibes there that you got. It was more like, oh, okay, this is just kind of a way to like to numb everything or just to get by and get through. And then the other piece I liked in this is, like, you see him, like, continually struggling with relationships with women in his life and with his parents, just trying to impress them and to be in that whole piece. And so, you know, you see him fucking lose it at the Caddyshack premiere in New York, and his parents are there, and, like, he's just acting like an asshole. And I don't know if that's accurate compared to, like, what really happened or if that's just kind of one of the things they took liberties with.
I think that's one of the things they took liberty with. You can actually watch that interview on YouTube. I have before. But there is no... whether it was cut off and it didn't happen or I don't know, but there is no Doug Kenny interrupting it. But it's the interview where they're all sitting there like that and they're in those outfits.
Yeah, and so that could be something. Clearly, you wouldn't put that on TV or whatever, but...
So yeah, but at least they tell you that they changed a bunch of stuff. They even literally put it all on the screen at one point and list it all off. They're like, here's a bunch of shit we changed just because it's a fucking movie and we tried to tell a coherent story.
Yeah, we're trying to tell a coherent story in a limited amount of time. Like, yeah, that was a really good thing in there as well. Like, some of the editorial choices they did with how the movie flows and lays itself out I thought were fun because it didn't feel like something I'd seen a million times.
Yeah, for sure. And the way... I don't know, I really liked the emotional scenes, especially once he's gone with Chevy Chase. You know, he's left town and shit.
Yeah, I believe they're in Hawaii in real life is where they were when he died.
Yeah. And they still don't know if he actually killed himself or if he accidentally fell. Like, it's a mysterious death still to this day. You know, yeah, Chevy Chase will swear up and down that he would have never killed himself.
Yeah, there's that whole piece that, yeah, he never would have done that, but then somebody said, you know, like, he died tripping, like, looking for a better place to jump from, I think is kind of what one of the
That's what Harold Ramis said.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And he has apparently really said that in real life. Several people have said that he said that in real life. Like, yeah, he probably fell while looking for a place to look to jump.
Yeah, and that seems believable based on what you're hearing there.
Yeah, and then they have that... the food fight at his funeral, which just kind of lightens it up and makes you feel a little bit better. And you're like, hey, that is a pretty dope funeral. You know, I don't even know if that happened or anything, but that's way to end a movie.
From a storytelling standpoint, yeah, like that movie kind of ends there in an interesting spot.
Yeah.
The other thing they talk about in there that they kind of start opening the movie with, but then they don't, is like how...
His brother died.
His brother died at a young age. And he was and Doug was the younger brother. It was his older brother, Daniel, I think is what his name was. And he died as a kid. And, you know, always feeling that resentment of not being who his parents wanted to be. And the movie did a good job of portraying, like, that struggle that he had. Like, clearly intelligent, well-to-do, got into Harvard anyway, yet still feeling that insurmountable pressure from your parents to be successful while living in that shadow of, like, what somebody else could have been. So, yeah, I mean, that's a very dynamic thing to be showing in there for someone that's extremely hilarious, but, right? But name how many funny people do you know that don't use comedy as, like, a coping mechanism, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, every type of trauma you may experience in your life, you can cope with in comedic ways.
That's why they say comedy is tragedy plus time and shit, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it makes sense, right? You know, and, you know, I was joking with some of my friends over the weekend. I was like, you know, like, you either have, like, really ugly people that are funny just because, you know, like, that's what they get good at. And, like, I'm not here to judge, like, somebody being good looking or not. But I'm just saying, like, that or, like, when you see someone that's, like, insanely attractive or, like, almost borderline being able to be a model, you're like, okay, they've been through some shit, right? It doesn't just come that naturally to most people. Not to say there's not exceptions to all these rules, but you definitely get those vibes. Like, yeah, if you're that funny, you're using that as a coping mechanism, or even if you've recovered from it, like, that comedy you can pull out of situations, you know, no matter how dark it is, like, is still, I don't know, I just think it becomes part of you if you're able to get there. And this movie showed that, right? Like, all the funny stuff in there, because every time he's, like, changing the subject, he's making a joke, kind of changing, getting things off rail, like when he's in trouble with his girlfriend or pissing someone off at work, you know, like his escape from that scary situation for him was to make a joke, change the subject.
Yep.
And I think that's very relatable for a lot of people if you break it down in those terms.
I'm really glad that this movie was made just to shine more light on Doug Kenny, because a lot of people don't know who he is. I had heard his name a few times in things like interviews that I've watched about Caddyshack and stuff. And even then, mostly it's Chevy Chase who talks about him. Chevy Chase always talks highly of Doug Kenny, and that's pretty much the only person I've really heard talk about him much, unless I'm searching out information on Doug Kenny.
And that makes me wonder, just from a perspective, right? Because Chevy Chase is kind of known as an asshole right now, right? You know?
Yeah.
And kind of always has had that reputation, or at least just being difficult. But, like, you take someone that's teetering on, like, being decent versus being an asshole, and hearing what I've heard the stories about Chevy Chase and how he is, especially how he's gotten later over time and stuff, is like, makes so much more sense to know that one of his best friends died mysteriously, right?
Yeah.
Did he feel guilty for that, for leaving him? Because, like, he left, and then he called his wife back out, and then she had to go back to work, too. So, like, he was, like, kind of left out there alone in Hawaii for himself for a little bit. So did Chevy Chase feel really guilty about not just staying there and being there for his friend? You know, because that's clearly one of the things that they show, and they're like, even when he's talking so much shit on Caddyshack, like,
yeah,
clearly Chevy Chase is a big, you know, got a big starring role in that, so one of your best friends is talking shit on something that he wrote that you starred in, you know, their friendship has to go pretty deep for them to continue on and carry on, like, in the background beyond that stuff.
For sure.
So I think that probably really had a profound impact on Chevy Chase, right? And if you're using drugs and doing all that shit too, right, you know how the mental health crisis is in America. No one wants to fucking talk about shit or get help for it. They'd just rather fucking implode and go into rehab, but I don't know if rehab works so much on substance abuse than it does with, like, actually fixing the stuff that causes you to be a substance abuser. So,
did they say at one point it was like when they're trying to deliver a cut of Caddyshack that it was like, your cut's over 4 hours long or some shit?
Yes, they did say that. Yeah,
it's fucking hilarious. I want to watch a 4 hour cut of Caddyshack.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet. So the other thing I learned about both. That, right? It makes sense when they're talking about Caddyshack is, much like Animal House is like satire too, like the man in like the state of things in politics and just the coming of age story that Animal House was, is how like anti-golf this golf movie is, right? People that golf love this movie because it's funny and it's about golf, but I mean, really what you're taking away is like, the people that don't take it too seriously, that just screw around with it and like make it a funny thing about like these people that are so uptight and pretentious about shit, right? And essentially that's what it comes down to is, right, there's these people out there having a great time, Rodney Dangerfield character, Chevy Chase, you know, like you got these guys in this movie being completely over the top in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously even Bill Murray in there too, so...
opposite of fucking Ted Knight, who's the most uptight motherfucker in the movie.
Exactly. Yeah, uptight, like kind of, like everyone kind of knows someone like him. Like that's the definition of like the white privilege type of person right there. And you're just like, Jesus, what the hell's wrong with that guy? But everyone's probably met more than one person like him before, which is fucking wild. So when you look at it in terms of that, that makes that movie that much funnier when you kind of realize some of the context of what they're thinking when they wrote it.
Yeah. I'm literally looking at both copies I have on VHS of Animal House and Caddyshack right now. Because those are the two movies that actually got released that he got to work on. Obviously, Animal House, directed by John Landis. We talked about Blues Brothers. Animal House is one I didn't see till I was an adult, but I always knew it existed. But I just never had a reason to see it because it was... I just didn't as a kid.
But, so Animal House I saw for the first time in... probably the fourth grade. Our neighbors behind us, we had some new neighbors move in behind us, a kid named Andrew and his parents, and his dad was in the Air Force. He's an Air Force recruiter, and so he got assigned to be a recruiter out here in Olathe, Kansas, suburb of Kansas City. They moved in behind us and became friends with him, and his parents are a little bit younger than our parents, but not a lot, but he really loved that movie. So, you know, his dad had shown him that, so we'd go over there and watch that, and, you know, he put it on more than once when we're over there hanging out. So, like, that was my first time seeing Animal House. And then, of course, you're like, oh, there's boobies at the beginning when that's the most thrilling thing in the world. And, of course, as they say in the movie, and, of course, tits.
Right. And then you see Ivan Reitman turning around while they're recording it.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of give a, oh, yeah, I'm looking at tits face, basically.
Yep. No, so that was a lot of fun stuff in there, right? And then you can see from their Harvard upbringing. And then the other thing that really... kind of made me crack up is that famous cover they show of the dog with a gun pointed at his head, like looking like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And like that being like the catalyst for increased magazine sales, because people see that magazine cover and be like, what the fuck is this? And I can see that now, because like that's like a shock cover, right? You're going to get people interested in there. And previous to that, they were arguing over the direction of the art in the magazine. So to see that, like, you know, I'd love to go back and just a coffee table art book of just old magazine covers for that would be pretty awesome, just to see like how that evolved and how that changed over time.
For sure.
But
they probably fetch a pretty price on eBay, those originals.
Yeah, and then do you know if Doug Kenny's novel was ever released that he finished?
I don't think so.
Yeah, because the other thing in there, they show like his downward spiral, right? He was only 33 when he died. And they show that he even goes gonzo at one point in time, right? So,
yeah.
Gonzo, if you're not like very familiar with the vernacular, is, you know, kind of that Hunter S. Thompson guerrilla journalism that's just like ready to go do whatever and just stir shit. So the fact that he claims, you know, he had to go gonzo and just fucking disappear and do his own thing for a while was kind of interesting. But as a writer, you know, even if you're in comedy, you're going to be inspired by what other writers are doing at the time. So if you look at the time for Hunter S. Thompson doing some of his work, and especially his magazine writing, a lot of overlap there. So to me, that would have been interesting to see what the dynamics were there, if there was any relationship between them. Yeah, that's crazy, though. Anytime you see like a biopic about someone that did so well but died at 33, I'm like, fuck, I'm older than that right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's mind-blowing to me, you know? I mean, we've all seen it with musicians, but for musicians, like, the touring lifestyle's hard, the fame's hard, right? Because there's so many different levels of creative types, right? And I find a lot of musicians kind of are on that level of overwhelmed, not overwhelmed by the popularity there. And, you know, a lot of people were abusing drugs just to be able to interact with people. And you can kind of see some of those things where those things went awry. So we're just partying too hard. And you didn't get that vibe from this. Like, you got vibes that, like, he was lost his shit for a while, but you didn't feel like, oh, shit, he just OD'd and died. So the mystery behind it, too, kind of adds to the intrigue of this story.
Right. He seemed like a cool dude. He's, you can see him. Like I said, I'm pretty sure, 100% sure that was him in Blues Brothers. But you can see him in both Animal House and Caddyshack for a short minute. He has cameos.
So that is a futile and stupid gesture.
Check it out on Netflix if you have Netflix, because it's, it's worth it if you like these kind of movies and the National Lampoon stuff and all those actors, and it's a fun watch at least once.
I feel like it's important if you like modern comedy, right? Because comedy changed so much through the 70s, 80s, and then even the early 90s, so the people that you may be loving now, like, these are the people that influenced them, right? These are the people that shaped their comedic mind. So, and the same thing goes for music, right? You know, if you want to know, like, if you want to get deeper into music or have a greater knowledge of music, well, you find out who your favorite band's favorite artists were, like, right? What did they listen to a lot? What are their influences? And then you can go back another layer on there and see what else you learned. Same thing goes for comedy, right? Figure out who influenced those people, go back, check this out, and I think this is a good glimpse into kind of what things looked like and what they were. And it's also just interesting to see because the way it was edited and the way the story's laid out. So it's not a movie you're going to watch and be like, oh, you know what that reminded me of? A Futile and Stupid Gesture. No, because this kind of does its own thing while telling the story. So
yeah,
you won't be bored in it, I'll tell you that.
Makes me want to check out the book about him.
Definitely. With the collection I have, at some point, I definitely want to write that one down. Definitely.
Hey, kids. Alec here with the Frog Brothers Podcast, reminding you to check out our YouTube, where we have exclusive mailtime videos featuring collectibles, toys, comics, VHS, rare DVDs, shirts, pins, and more. Be sure to hit subscribe. Hit us up on Facebook and Instagram to see live unboxing videos and daily updates. You can find all of our podcast episodes up on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and most places where podcasts are available. Keep an eye out for merchandise in the future. And remember, Second Shelf is mine. That's where I keep my root beers and double thick Oreo cookies. Nobody touches the Second Shelf but me.
Cry! Top five.
This is top five.
So, top five this week. We had a couple different ideas, but we tossed around a bunch of different ones and decided to try to do something a little bit different this week. Try to do something with toys.
Yeah, we've done a lot of stuff about movies, actors. But this week, we went the toy route because, well, we buy a lot of toys, collect a lot of toys. And trying to find some overlap, something that's manageable to make a top five out of.
Vintage so, Ghostbusters toys.
Yes, because we started saying Ghostbusters toys, but there's so many new ones now. You know, the last 15 years, basically, we've been pretty spoiled for having a lot of new merchandise in one way or another, especially with the video game and the Maddie Collector line kind of morphing over and carrying over through Answer the Call and some of the other lines. So we went vintage. So what we're including as vintage is, for our list, mostly going to be Kenner Real Ghostbusters and Trendmasters Extreme Ghostbusters. So we had both of those in the house growing up. Decent variety of those, and then we're gonna just do our top five of those. So, Alec, what is your number five vintage Ghostbuster toy?
All right, I tried to get as much variety as I could, and as much as I like and love Extreme Ghostbusters, I knew I'd probably only have one spot on my list for anything from them. But I also knew what that would be immediately, which is the Extreme Ghostbusters Ecto-1. It's fucking solid. It is fun. It has a bunch of different weird extra features like toys often do, and especially Trendmaster toys. They always have a bunch of extra different weird stuff, but it's always like extra fun stuff. So it has lights and sounds, which, correct me if I'm wrong, the other Ecto did not.
No, the Kenner Ecto-1 did not have lights or sounds.
So, therefore, I believe this one is better for that simple reason alone. It also has, like, 7 different sound effects in there, including a proton stream, has a missile firer under the hood, has a satellite, it comes with a little trap containment unit. I just like it.
Yeah, and battle damage from driving, right?
Might get a
little off-road or hit some fire extinguishers or curbs or parked cars when you're driving down the streets of New York.
Pretty much. It's a dope toy, though. But I put it at number 5 since it's Extreme Ghostbusters and whatnot. So
my number 5 is also my only Extreme Ghostbusters toy on the list. Mine was the Egon. Mostly just because, to me, that was the character that I knew when the show came out, before we'd seen the show, because I think we found some of the toys before the show was actually out. And so I was like, oh, Egon, I know Egon, so I'll get Egon, right? He carried over to Real Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And that was the only figure I ever got from that line. I still have it, like all the parts, the traps, the missiles, and the ghost. And to me, like, that was just kind of it. That was right around the time that Ghostbusters recaptured my imagination. I think I'd seen, like, in a Disney magazine or something, like, the Super Ghostbusters, like, ad coming out soon, right? Like, it is a coming attraction for the fall. So I knew it was coming out, you know, but by then they'd changed the name of it or whatever, so. So that got me to rewatching the movie again, I think, you know, because we had the VHS tape, and I hadn't watched it in a long time because, you know, peer pressure and everything else, it's just not cool to be into that, you know? So, you know, and you're a grade school kid, right? There's always something new, a new toy line to get or whatever else. But when I went back and revisited the movie and saw how funny it was and all the adult jokes that I didn't get before, it was like, oh. So, like, that kind of... Egon carried the torch to bring the old team to the new and, like, kind of bridge that gap, you know, especially being voiced by the same actor, Maurice LaMarche, and having that. So my number 5 is Egon, because that just is the epitome of that line for me, just like that classic character still being there when you need him.
Yep. Solid.
What's your number four?
My number four is going to be from the first series of Kenner Real Ghostbusters line, the Green Ghost action figure.
Very good choice. Very good choice.
Slimer's just fucking classic. Obviously, this is labeled Green Ghost. Maybe there's some sort of licensing issue there. Maybe they just fucking wanted to call it Green Ghost. Who knows? But
I don't think they determined that they're going to name him Slimer yet. I think they had the toys.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, clearly to launch in time with the series launch, right? Lots of times you're going to have stuff put out in advance. Same reason why right. Extreme Ghostbusters has Sam Hain released, even though he's never on there. He's part of the concept art, so.
Which, by the way, Sam Hain was one of the other options from Extreme Ghostbusters that I almost put on this list, just because it was so cool to finally get a fucking Sam Hain figure. At least you could get one in the 90s. And now I have the Diamond Select one that they released, too, because I had always wanted Sam Hain figures. Now I have two.
Nice. Yeah, and the Mini-Mates did a really good job with the Real Ghostbusters one, but I just didn't really care for the Mini-Mates style, so.
Yeah, that's the only only thing that made me want to get anything Mini-Mates ever was the Boogeyman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
But what's your number four?
My number four is Series 1, Wave 1, Peter Venkman.
Classic.
So even as a kid, right, I honestly have no recollection because, you know, I came out in the year the movie came out. And I started watching Ghostbusters when it came out. And so I remember, like, having a handful of Ghostbusters toys, you know, from a very young age on. And I've got photos of me opening them for birthdays and different occasions. But it was even before, like, I guess I really realized how funny Bill Murray was elsewhere, right? When you don't understand the adult humor, you don't necessarily need to know, like, that Bill Murray's hilarious as Peter Venkman. But I just like the way, like, it's just something about the cartoon character Peter Venkman and how he was annoyed by Slimer all the time and everything else. Something about him struck a chord with me. So that Peter Venkman, man, like I still have my original childhood Venkman. Don't have any of his accessories, but I still have that. And like you still look at that and it's just full of nostalgic memories of awesomeness.
Yeah, I pulled my re-release of that figure off the shelf right now, holding him as you talk about it. I have him out of box. I have another set too, but yeah, I always played with these with you as a kid, but they were hand-me-downs, and I think we had one proton pack, is all I remember having left by the time I really remember playing with them, so.
Yeah, our mom was good at flipping stuff in garage sales, so for as much of that as I did have, I never had much more.
Yeah. So, number three for me is actually going to be one of my favorite action figures from this line. And I don't know, I feel like I have to mention Yes Have Some Podcast for this one because I didn't really know this figure line even existed until I started listening to their podcast a lot. The Ecto-Glow figures, specifically Egon, is my number three.
Oh, cool.
I want those fucking figures so fucking bad. They are so goddamn cool looking. I also really like the Slime Heroes outfits, and I almost put one of those on here, but honestly, it's the Ecto-Glow ones are just fucking too sick, and I need that line.
Now, that's very awesome. For me, most of mine's very nostalgia-fueled because I had so much of this line as a kid.
Yeah.
And I totally see why you have that on there. And, you know, mm-hmm. those came out near the very end. I think that was the last wave of the basic heroes that were ever released, right? You know, that was kind of the, like the wrap-up of the line. That's why it's so hard to find them, especially on card. They go for such crazy prices just because the circulation wasn't as wide as it was for the other figures.
Yeah.
And, you know, your retail space, right? It was always one of those things, like, especially with old series figure lines, like, right, even with Ninja Turtles, right, if you didn't get those figures when they're out on their for their release time, they just didn't remake those again, right? They'd kind of make them, and they'd go out of print, and then they'd release with new figures. So if you didn't get the regular Ghostbusters, and you never had those, you weren't going to get them. You know, you had to go with like either the slimed heroes or any of the other different variations of the figures with the packs.
Right.
And you had no idea that that was how it was as a kid, so. Pretty
What's
interesting stuff
three?
There, so. My number three is
Hold
the,
on a second. My bad, hold on.
Fuck off, I'm recording a podcast here.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, so my number three is the Kenner Ghost Trap. So
nice.
That trap was badass. It came with a re-release of one of the same ghosts, except this one was glow-in-the-dark. You know, the trap pedal actually worked if you stepped on it right. It was just a little air-blowing mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the classic blue color and the trap doors were glow in the dark as well, so like if you played with this thing out in the sun and took it into the dark, I mean, glow in the dark role play toys is pretty badass. And I remember like having that and then putting that with my proton pack and just being so excited to put that on there and hang that on the hook and then just have the proton gun too.
Yeah.
Fun fact though, like as a kid, I remember the first time I noticed a toy line reusing another piece to another toy line. So we had some neighbor friends up the street, and they had a Nerf rocket launcher. Like it would fire Nerf rockets. Mm-hmm. You know, basically just foam, like long foam darts with fins on them. And the foot trap pedal was the same as Ghostbusters, but instead of blue, it was red. And, you know, basically it was just your air pushing mechanism to launch the rocket. So that's I remember sick. Seeing that on there and be like, that's from the Ghost Trap. And it was just a different color. So if anyone out there is trying to replicate the prop, you can also look for the old Nerf air gun and just repaint that blue if you're having a hard time finding the authentic trap pedal for the real Ghostbusters Kenner Ghost Trap.
That's very interesting.
Oh, well, that's funny. It is mud.
So my number two is the Ghostbusters Kenner Trap. For pretty much all the reasons you said. I remember this disappearing at some point very early on, but I do have memories of it still existing in our house. I remember literally the only memory I have of it pretty much is waking up one morning and looking down off of the bunk beds we slept in, like a red bunk bed set, and I was on the top, and I looked down and saw the trap there was on the floor. And, you know, it's just one of those weird random flashes that I still have a memory of. I don't know why, but...
Yeah, you have no recollection why it's there, but it's still there. It's imprinted
Probably because it was the Ghostbusters trap, and I was like, oh, hey, that's pretty badass to wake up to.
Yeah. So, funny story about that trap, the one I had as a kid. So, you know, we used to, like, play hide-and-go-seek as a family or whatever, and we could never figure out where the fuck Dad hid. He still would tell us. He's like, I'll tell you on my... I think he's, like, tried to tell us. He wouldn't even tell us on his deathbed. He's like, it'll be in my will or some shit. No, like, whatever. Bullshit. Probably fucking just left the house and went outside for a while. No one can't find me because I'm not in the fucking house. Yeah, that makes sense.
I went to the strip club for an hour.
Yeah. I went outside and drank a couple of beers. Came back in. You guys didn't notice. No, but Mom was hiding once, and she was hiding under our bunk bed in our room, and no one, like, wanted to reach under there and, you know, try to see if she's under the bed and, like, scare her. So I remember, like, I rolled the trap in there, and, like, when we eventually found her, she was pissed because she got hit with the trap, like, three or four times. But I was like, well, no one moved or said anything, so, like,
That's
I just
so
assumed
fucking
she wasn't
ridiculous.
Actually there. Yeah, so I was using my trap to, like, probe somebody out because I didn't want to get grabbed or startled or scared from that. I was like, no, fuck that. So, good times.
Amazing. What's your number two?
My number two is the proton pack.
I knew that's what it would be.
It was very close, very, very close between that and the slime charger, whatever they called the slime blower for the Kenner line.
I don't like the Ecto charger or something. I don't think it had the word slime in it. It's something lame, but whatever. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yep, so... But the classic proton pack, I remember when I got that. I got that for my birthday one year, and Granny came down from Omaha to come visit for my birthday, and she brought that down. So I remember getting that, and probably made everyone else feel like shit because I was like, oh, thank you so much for this, you know, and just like
losing your shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that fuck everything else. This is the only thing that matters. Burn everything else.
Because, I mean, you see that proton pack at the store, right? And you're like, oh, my God, I have to have that. You get it, and then it's got the straps. You can put it on. It's got the PKE meter in there, too. And you can spin the antenna on the top right. Then it's got the foam. Then it had the trigger to make, like, kind of its own sound, which I promptly broke very quickly from overuse. So, but, yeah, the proton pack, you know, that's one of those things. It's so badass now, but, you know, it's one of those things you've always wanted. You get it, and then when you outgrow that, you're like, oh, I want more. And then look at me now. I'm too deep.
Oh, man. So I'm going to say my number one, and then immediately afterwards, I want you to tell me if it's your number one, because I'm pretty sure we both are going to have picked the Real Ghostbusters Firehouse playset.
Yes, we had to. For multiple reasons. Multiple reasons.
All of the reasons. I love that fucking thing. I miss the shit out of it.
Yes.
Need to get a hold of one these days, but I'm going to wait till after I get my own place, and I'm going to hunt one down eventually, though.
Yeah, that's kind of my thoughts. I'd like to get one eventually, too. I mean, I have very early memories of that, like, being probably three years old, probably. I mean, because Jenna was like a baby, I want to say. So maybe me being... somewhere around three there, you know, and like having that in my bedroom and having like all my figures in that firehouse. And then the fact that they could slide down the fire pole, you could put two figures on there and slide them down that thing.
Yeah.
You know, you could put your ghosts in the containment unit by using the larger trap. All the little,
and
all the stickers on there that were so cool. Right. So, there's basically a picture of an old lady in there that looks like Granny Gross. From Rogue Ghostbusters episode, right?
Yeah.
On the wall. And then they had a little white railing in there that's like very, very kind of what you'd expect from, like, I mean, it's basically a white version of what looks like metal tubing for that stuff in there.
Yeah.
You had two shelves, right? You had a middle floor and you had a top floor, and then you could slime them through the roof, and that would slime down from the second floor or from the roof to the top floor all the way down. Because the second floor was only like an L shape or, you know, part of the square in that corner there. So
the I remember we also, the great thing about this playset is it was very functional as any other things you wanted to play besides Ghostbusters as well.
Yes. So I will say, like, right, with four kids in the house, I got that when I was really young, and we didn't get a lot of other playsets. I can't think of any other playsets we had. Maybe you had some, but for me, that was the playset we had the longest. I mean, I remember using that for, you know, I remember people being excited because they got Wayne Manor in the Batcave.
Right.
You know what I use for Wayne Manor in the Batcave? Ghostbusters Firehouse.
Right.
That's where Batman lived. And that's where the Ninja Turtles lived, too. Right?
Yeah, if your imagination works well enough, you can easily pretend that that's an underground Bat Cave.
Oh, yeah. And the thing was, like, the wheelbase was basically pretty similar for the Batmissile Kenner Batmobile. And so, you know, there was actually a set of basically, like, wheel chocks in the firehouse that you could rest your Ecto-1 on, right? So it wouldn't roll out of the building, which is a pretty smart move for the time. But, yeah, you could put that in there. So
you know the little stands they used to put at Pizza Hut? In the center of the pizza. I remember taking those out and cleaning them off and using them as tables in the firehouse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'd use those tables for, like, you know, they'd be tables for any kinds of toys. The only That's other thing that we even had in the house that was anything remotely like that was Melissa had a dollhouse. And once in a while, you know, like, if that was available, I'd use that for figures, too. Just because it was a house and you had rooms for your figures to hang out in, but...
Right.
You know, you get on Instagram today and you wonder why so many people do such badass toy photography. It's because we had these things to fuel our imaginations. And how do you recapture that feeling? By taking pictures of those stuff and making them, like, feel like they're actually part of a movie or a comic or a cartoon. So, pretty cool stuff.
That was a good top five. And immediately when I went to write down my initial list, I was like, oh, the firehouse is number one.
Oh, yeah.
And then the only reason I didn't put the proton pack on there, I decided against it because it didn't have lights or sounds. It only had stickers, and I was like, okay. And I didn't really ever have one, so I've never messed with one. I accept the Extreme Ghostbusters one I had, but then again, it is an Extreme Ghostbusters proton pack. So it didn't quite look right, it didn't look the same, it didn't feel right, even though it was Extreme Ghostbusters.
So. Oh, yeah. So, speaking of the Kenner line, because we've got a few minutes here, we're not in a rush. Man, some of those Kenner Ghostbusters toys were crazy, because they never made any ghosts that were directly from the ongoing series. But if you've right. seen the restored version of the pilot, you'll see a lot of influence there in the Kenner toy design.
What I want to see is this Plasma series do a wave of ghosts from the cartoon.
Yeah, and they very well could. So I would love to see that.
I mean, hopefully they do a bunch of different stuff. I would like to see them do the IDW versions as well as, you know, both like the real Ghostbusters, the Extreme Ghostbusters, the Afterlife Ghostbusters, and like I said, these... I mean, I know that's a lot to ask for, but God damn it, give me some Ghostbusters toys! I want the ghosts. That's what everybody's been asking for so long, and it's like, we need a goddamn Boogeyman, a Sandman, a Samhain. Those are the three big ones that people want. I mean, there's a bunch of other ones you can give us, too.
If you just did those, you'd be fine. That's why this toy line was so interesting, though. The other thing I was going to mention, though, was like in the intro, the pilot version... that you can see, and you know they have on the 4K release, and you can see on Ghostbusters.com.
Yeah,
shows the an airplane flying around. Basically, that they made a toy of that's basically became the Ecto Bomber, but like it showed a ghost flying it around, which also kind of reminded me of the plane I think it was flying around on the Flip Side episode, like when that tornado comes through and kind of throws them to the flip side. So there's a few interesting pieces there, and then. One of the last Ghostbusters toys I remember ever getting from that line was the Ghost Sweeper, right? It basically had a proton blaster on there, but it was like a street sweeper, so it would sweep the ghosts up into it with a little cage that almost kind of looked like the, just like a metal trap lid or whatever. So
yeah.
And I remember having that because, like, Mom and Dad must have got it on clearance or something because I wasn't even really, you know, I was way more into Ninja Turtles at the time. And that was just kind of one of the last ones I remember having, but still played with it a fair amount, you know. Crossover, you know, as a kid, you cross over whatever toy lines you have and make your own universe, so.
Still a lot of fun. Yeah, at one point, they brought me home randomly, like one night they were out, and they brought home, like, a Brendan Fraser from the Mummy action figure, along with the guy who played Imhotep action figure. The Mummy, you know, so it was like I randomly got two of those action figures and was like, all right. But I ended up using Brendan Fraser as a bunch of other different people randomly throughout time, so.
Yeah, and some other toy lines I remember getting into pretty heavy was Terminator 2. And obviously, the Terminator lived in the firehouse as well. But the nice thing was, is that all those
I didn't know you had any of those toys.
Oh, yeah, I had a decent amount of them. Not a lot, but I had enough.
Because that's one of those toy lines I look back on and I'm like, huh, I might get some of those someday. They look pretty sick.
Yeah, and some of the ones I had, I think the NECA's done the re-releases of, you know, like the highly detailed versions of them. And like, you're like, oh man, that's badass.
Yeah, NECA's, like their deluxe line or whatever they call it right now. I don't know what it's called. But they have, I've been seeing the T2 box art. And they have the Arnold and they have... couple other different ones. I think the Arnold's the only one I've really seen. But yeah, like I said, I'm all about the Gremlins right now with NECA. I can't be. Although, like I said, if I see that Raph and KC2 pack, I'm going to buy it, but I'm not hurting for it either.
Yeah, and that's crazy for me because I definitely had a lot of Ninja Turtles as well, but for one reason or another, I just haven't ever got back into collecting that. Like, And I could, but that's just going to be like a rabbit hole. Like, I know if I go down that road, it's going to be expensive.
It's like going down Real Ghostbusters, because both of those lines have like a good period of time with a bunch of different variations of four characters.
That, and
you
then
know what I mean?
The one thing, though, that Playmates did that they really killed it on was just the expanded universe characters, right? Like, all the Ninja Turtles characters that were from the show were... Yeah, that was basically all from the show, right? That was the thing with Real Ghostbusters is, aside from the basic figures and Stay Puft and Green Ghost, you didn't get a whole lot from the show. You know, they had different variations of Slimer and stuff like that, but nothing was directly out of the show. So that kind of... I mean, that took away some of the fun of the line, but at the same time, it was neat because it was stuff that wasn't on there, so I guess you got to use your imagination more and tell your own stories instead of just retelling stories you already knew. So in one way, I do like when a toy line is willing to take chances like that and kind of do their own thing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of neat when you look at it in those regards, right? To encouraging creativity and, you know, making your own universe and telling your own story that way. I think that's great.
You want to move on to Comic Toast Reviews?
Sure.
Listen, buddy, if you're looking for the diet frozen yogurt bar, it went out of business last summer.
Actually, I'm looking for a Batman number 14.
That's a very serious book, man.
You remember the Fantastic Four?
Well, yeah, with that invisible bitch and Fame on his head.
Come on, you fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want!
So, episode 3 of Reign of Frogs, the Lost Boys comic series. We've done
issue
the other
three.
Two. What did I say? Episode 3?
Yeah, it's fine. We all kind of go down those same old paths.
Whatever. Issue 3, episode 3. Dick, penis, penis, dick, same thing.
Well, a gentleman would use a dick bib. So, but you probably haven't seen the league to know that.
Now, I was quoting my childhood self. That's one of mom's favorite quotes from me as a kid. I called my penis a dick. And she was like, it's called a penis. And I was like, dick, penis, penis, dick, same thing. I was like three
so
or
fucking,
something or two, you know,
so
like really young.
For who you became as an adult.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's pretty glorious.
And it also reminds me of, he called the shit poop.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Don't put it out with your boots, Ted.
Mind your business, devil woman.
So this is probably one of my favorite issues of this so far.
It was good. As you recall, we left off on a cliffhanger where you find out that Grandpa is a vampire. And they're alluding to him being the head vampire.
Right.
And then we find out that that's a bunch of malarkey. He's only a half vampire.
And it's a bunch of malarkey. I'm only a half vampire.
Exactly. And he still likes his root beer and his Oreos.
But here's the interesting thing I noticed. He says something about eating his double stuff Oreos in this. But he calls them double thick Oreos in the movie. And I don't even know if they made those in the 80s, because I wasn't around in that time period of 1987. But
they did, because they had the bright pink packaging, kind of like they used to accent it as like accents on it now. Like back then, it was like way brighter pink, so you knew that that was the double stuff. But I don't know if they were called double stuff. I'm pretty sure they were always called double stuff, but that's something a fucking grandpa would say, though, right? That's such a grandpa thing to say, my double stuff, or my double thick.
Yeah. So they should have got that right, because that's what he says in the movie. He should have called them double thick still. But
yeah,
I thought it was interesting how he's half vampire, and he only feeds on animals, and that's why he has, you know, does taxidermy and all that stuff.
Yeah,
that
to me,
made
that was
about the most sense it could have.
That was the only thing so far in this series that I was like, okay, I buy that. That's the only thing I was like, okay, that has logic and reasoning from what we know about this series to where it is now.
Yep, for sure.
And then
Some of the back and forth between Edgar and Alan and the grandpa is pretty funny, though. I don't have anything specific written down, but I remember it being... this issue is just significantly better than the first two, so...
Yeah, one of the notes I had was that they're adding bullshit to the vampire lore here, right? They're trying to retcon some shit just to tell their story, which...
Yeah.
It's usually bullshit, and that bullshit that they said is that only if you're a half-vampire would killing the head vampire return you to normal.
As well as... Well, yeah, that fucks up weird vampire lore. But I'm also kind of like, all right, the head vampire, don't have a problem with it being a woman, by any means, but it's the Widow Johnson, just so you can name another character from the movie.
Yeah, like, to me, that was kind
of... That could have been a new character.
Yeah, or, that's...
I mean, yeah.
Well, and they could have said he turned her, and then it was a whole other thing. But basically, what you get out of this issue is that Grandpa's a dirty old man, but he's funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, he kind of does his ways to cope, so...
He talks about how in her dungeon they have all sorts of blood play, foot worship, and shishy training.
Yeah, and they're all grossed out by it.
Which basically accounts to Grandpa saying, I let the Widow Johnson peg me.
I mean, hey, people gotta do what they gotta do, man. No,
I'm not shaming him. I didn't shame him. I just said that's what it equates to.
There's no kink shaming here. Do what you want. Do what makes you happy. As long as it's
my
illegal,
double
it
thick Oreo dildo. So anyway, there's some sexy goth bitches down there.
Yeah, and then you see that like David's like trying to get his revenge too. So
yeah.
So that's why David didn't turn. You know, as David was already a full vampire. They still don't explain how he survived. Which, whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of meh. I'm kind of the thing I'm thinking is, all right, if David survived and you're trying to put David back into the comic, why the fuck isn't this the movie instead? Why would David be not in the movie but he's in the comic? That's just bad.
It is. It's
probably
the terrible part of this.
You couldn't afford Kiefer Sutherland, and he was probably like, fuck you, this is a terrible script, even if they gave him one with him in it. But it kind of just seems like, all right, well, if he's not going to be in the movie should have been the part with him in it. You know what I mean?
Well, the problem is, though, is that if a vampire doesn't age, you can't have current Kiefer Sutherland playing himself. All right, great, that doesn't work. They waited too long for these. Because basically, this series is supposed to be a direct lead-in prequel, catch you up to The Lost Boys, The Tribe.
Yeah.
So what you do find out, though, is that Alan gets turned right at the end of this issue and admits to kind of liking it. And, you know, yeah. Then it says to be concluded. So, you know, they end on another cliffhanger here, which for a
Alan's
miniseries,
like, she pegged me, and I kind of liked it.
So there's a few things in here that really kind of stood out towards the end of the issue, right? You know, it was extreme heavy From Dusk Till Dawn vibes of the titty twister, like going down to the dungeon of, like, stripper vampires, basically. You're like, okay, it's kind of been done, but I mean, I get it. That's kind of one of the tropes of vampire lore, is like that sexy vampire female, or, you know, that sex appeal of a vampire, the youthfulness of living forever and all that. But at the same time, you're like, do you have to be so cliche?
You'll never grow old, Michael, and you'll never have trouble getting erections.
Yes, exactly. And then the one thing in here that really made me cringe, though, was the Scarface joke. You say hello, my little friend. And you're like, eh.
I didn't mind it too much, only because I know that the Edgar and Alan Frog's characters in general are kind of based around 70s and 80s, like, action movies and heroes, which, I mean, Scarface is more of a drama than an action. But that scene is, you know...
It just seemed like
it just seemed like a
cheap, cheesy throw in there to try to throw it in there and make it feel like it was in the 80s, right? It didn't really feel like it did much with the story as to being like a little nod to like a very well-known movie. So,
now they could have probably thrown in a more intelligent line.
Yeah,
there,
I was going to say, I'm sure there's way better. I mean, shit, they could have even done like a Terminator. Like, I mean, "You're terminated, asshole," would have been a way better line to throw in there as a something like that, right?
Fuck you, asshole.
Because you told me to.
He'll live.
Yeah. Because you just can't.
I watched those on VHS pretty recently. I have the 2-pack from, remember buying it at Best Buy as a kid, but it's still the same 2-pack I had.
Yeah.
I love it.
Hell yeah.
It was around the same time that I got that Mortal Kombat soundtrack on CD. Around that same era.
Yeah, makes sense.
I checked out The Mask on VHS last night, and it's probably been 20 years since I watched that movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I remember as a kid even thinking, hey, that's the Ghostbusters firehouse. I didn't know then as the differences between the New York and L.A. firehouses like I do now. But watching it again now, I was like, holy shit. Yeah, that's really it from the outside, the L.A. firehouse and the inside.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing, is they actually show you the outside of it, too, and you see the garage. When you get in the garage, you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense because you're in the interior shots.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I like that. Are.
Yeah, that movie
has a couple moments that I don't like, but overall it's pretty good. And to me, just give me anxiety anytime there's dogs in them and the dogs are doing dangerous things. I'm like, I don't want to watch that.
So the thing with that movie, and it feels like it should be an animated movie, just with some of the stuff being so over the top. I mean, in parts of it, it almost has vibes of being like a sequel to Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Just well, with that's the way thing is the storytelling idea is
presented to you. Yeah.
The comic and everything is like that. I haven't read the comic, but I've read about it. It would be cool to read it, though. But, you know, I kind of get the reason it's doing that. It's because he's a superhero. That's his character is obsessed with cartoons. You know, you even see at the beginning of the movie, he gets home from work and he puts in like a fucking old... I think
was he watching Mighty Mouse and Old Fox, that Cat Colin
Old
Fox.
Warner Brothers, tiny,
yeah,
fucking Looney Tunes and shit. His lamp or something is the fox from Looney Tunes and shit. So, the fox. I mean the wolf. But yeah, he has a lot of cartoony moments and stuff, and the animation is like, it's almost not terrible, but it's pretty bad still, but it's still watchable. It's still a decent movie. The mix of practical effects in there works pretty well with him actually wearing a, you know, prosthetic mask and shit. So
yeah, there's a fine line in the balance of it, right? It holds up pretty well for what it is, but some of the effect shots, you know, that are too CG heavy, like feel off. But I mean, it's a silly movie anyway, so like you don't need it to have, it doesn't need to look perfect to get the message across. So we should cover that one more in depth sometime, because that's kind of a silly movie that I don't think a lot of people think has aged well, right?
Yeah.
When you think Jim Carrey's filmography, like that's not one that comes to the top of people's minds all the time.
But if you talk to like people in the film world who are big comic book fans, they'll list that as one of the best comic book movies.
Oh, because it's faithfully adapted and well done. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
So, fun fact. So, Son of the Mask. You ever seen that?
No, I've never seen that trifling abomination. Why?
I'm trying to think. I want to say, my memory could be foggy here, but I want to say we went to that at the drive-in one night, and it must have been like one of the last times I remember going to the drive-in with like mom and dad and like everybody as a family. You know, because when I was a teenager, I was like, fuck hanging out with you guys. I don't want anyone to know where I come from. That's how I was. I was like, no, yeah, I don't have anyone around me besides me. But I remember that the Son of the Mask being so bad that, like, we actually fucking left the movie. That's the only time I ever remember, like, being like, okay, this is fucking stupid.
And, like, okay, we just that could be, full out left. I could have been there for that. But yeah. I definitely have not ever watched that movie, really.
You would have probably, well, I'm trying to think of how old you would have been, and we didn't even finish it, so that wouldn't say much for anybody, really.
So well, what are your final thoughts for this week?
Not much. I'm trying to get my savings together and get moved up to Kansas City. Living in Memphis right now, and I am not necessarily a fan of it. So I want to get up to Kansas City so we can start doing some shit. Get my own place.
A lot of stuff like that. So I was looking at a new place for myself soon, and if that's the case, then I'm going to have plenty of room to do some prop making there, because I'll have a nice garage and a nice storage area in the basement. It's kind of like all the same level, so it'd be pretty badass to work on any kind of projects we have there. So Son of the Mask came out in 2005. So I think
that
we
was
all
14
went to that.
Then.
But I'm pretty sure, let's see, no, that was before you guys moved. So yeah, I think we all went to the drive-in to that one night or something like that, or I think we tagged along, but it was so bad we like left.
Huh. Yeah, I don't remember that. That's weird.
Yeah, and you may not have. You may have been doing something else, but I think it was me and one of my exes at the time. Would have been around there that we went to that movie.
Interesting. I can remember seeing all sorts of movies at the Boulevard.
But I don't know if
The Mummy,
that makes
for
sense,
sure.
Huh.
Revenge of the Sith, I saw with Mom there.
This came
even
out
though
in
I had
February.
Already seen it in theaters with you.
So this says it came out in February. So I'm wondering, like, was it something that just happened to be playing to open the drive-in season? Would have had to have been.
That's weird.
Around that time. But yeah, I just remember like leaving that movie because it was so bad and like just like fucking driving off and like not to another, watch another movie there because like, they'd already started for, when they all did double features all the time. So.
Yeah.
terrible.
Yeah, I don't got much more on final thoughts this week. I'm kind of just doing that, trying to get by and trying to work. We had a bunch of robberies at work the last couple weeks, so we're not delivering to a certain part of town anymore.
Yeah, that's stressful bullshit right there, because you never know when someone's going to do something stupid over some delivery money.
Yeah, usually I'm having a good time driving around, listening to podcasts. I'd rather not have a gun shoved in my face, so.
Absolutely, I can feel that. But it looks like everything on the agenda has been canceled. I heard California's doing a major shutdown again, so we'll see what that does for toy distribution or what that's going to start looking like again. I mean, I don't think there's anything too insane coming out right now. I mean, since it seems to be mostly just the United States that can't get this corona bullshit together, everyone else worldwide seems to be not in dire straits as we are at the moment.
Yeah. The next toys that I'm trying to really, really get are those NECA Back to the Future toys, and I can't remember the exact date for those. So,
yeah, I don't know when the release date is on that. The only other high-ticket item that I'm kind of eyeing right now is I really want the Chronicle Collectibles Jurassic Park Cryo Can, and that's supposed to launch this fall. Like, you can still order it right now and do pre-order and payments, and I'm just like, I need to get moved first, and I got some other things I need to handle before I worry about that one $200 item and stuff.
Yeah, it makes sense. There's a $200 Gremlin that I'm looking at, and I feel the same way about. So,
yeah, get some cool stuff, but it's not urgent. Some of that stuff will be around for a minute, I'm sure, hopefully.
Self-control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty much it for this show. Give us your thoughts. If you've got a top five real Ghostbusters, Extreme Ghostbusters toys, let us know what yours are. If you got a different toy line you want to hear us talk about, let us know what's your favorite toy line out there. I know everyone's got their different stuff. So, and then if you're in the Kansas City area, check out the Screenland Armor. They're doing a lot of awesome movie showings up there, and they have a really cool vibe. Check out 13 Third and Mockingbird Lane, which is a Munsters reference for the uninitiated. And check out some of their toy sales. They do online sales on Friday nights. They do some Facebook Live sales right now. They do pre-orders and things like that, and he will do shipping. So, support a really badass local toy business, even if you're not in the Kansas City area.
Once, however long it takes, once things open back up, we will be participating in some sort of events in live formats, possibly at cons. We'll just have to see what happens and when things open back up and what it looks like. But we were going to be doing more. We're going to be doing more things. We're going to have a... Probably this week, keep an eye out on our Instagram and Facebook. We're probably going to launch a contest pretty soon. I got 5 VHS tapes, and we're going to make some little care packages for 5 winners of a contest we're going to be trying to do. So keep an eye. Keep your eyes open.
Keep your eyes closed? Was that what you said?
I said... Keep your eyes open. It's quoting Patrick Bateman from American Psycho.
Hey, speaking of Patrick Bateman from American Psycho, the Fright Rags American Psycho line launches, I think, in a few days. So if you're into that, they've got some... I think the quality of the American Psycho line is much better than the Twin Peaks line. I didn't find anything in the Twin Peaks line that was like, oh, I got to have that.
American Psycho line. Fucking horror for Twin Peaks, stuff. But there's so many different versions of... the stuff. I kind of like the hat. I might get the hat that just says Twin Peaks on it. But the problem with that is people are going to think it's from the restaurant or some shit. Everybody in public's always going to be like, oh, you like boobs too? I'm going to be like, fuck off.
Yeah, and that's a funny story. We'll have to have Tony on to tell it because he'll tell it way better than I will. But he told us about the time he stopped at Twin Peaks thinking it was a reference to the TV show and found out that it was a restaurant. And I mean,
yeah,
probably wasn't totally disappointed, but at the same time, you're like...
That happens a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
All right, kids!
Because it's hard to disappoint people when you're distracting them, but at the same time, you're like, well, maybe you should have thought about that before you named it after a TV series that had been around for a while.
So...
Who knows? All right.
What will we buy? What will we talk about next week?
Find out next time on the Frog Brothers Podcast.
Will there be action? Will there be excitement? There certainly won't be romance.
Will Alec win first place at his dance recital? Will Justin Strap-On finally come in the mail? Find out next week
on Unsolved Mysteries.
Good night
on Unsolved Mysteries.
Find out who gives a shit about Bigfoot.
Update.
Apparently
no
nobody gives a shit, so fuck
them. Tourette's guy videos for you. Those are fucking dumb, but they're kind of funny.
On that note,
good night.
Yeah, see you later.
These are my dinner guests, the Frog Brothers. Frog Brothers. Frog Brothers. These are my dinner guests, Frog Brothers. Frog Brothers. Frog Brothers. These are my dinner guests, the Frog Brothers. Frog Brothers. Frog Brothers. These are my dinner guests, Frog Brothers. Frog Brothers, Frog Brothers. These are my dinner guests, the Frog Brothers.